This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour, the week in review.
Hello, this is Jeremiah Jacques, contributing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. I'm filling in today for your regular host, Mr. Joel Hilliker. We appreciate you tuning in to Trumpet Hour today, and our panel of trumpet writers have some important and prophetically significant stories rounded up today that they're eager to get into. Here in the studio in Edmond, Oklahoma, we have Anthony Chibadidwe.
Hello there.
And Josue Michels.
Hello there.
And for his debut as a Trumpet Hour panelist, David Vihil.
Hey.
And joining us from our office in Jerusalem, Brent Noctegal.
Greetings.
Our first story today is a very tragic one about another terrorist attack in the Middle East, one that killed many people, including several Americans. For this, we'll go to Brent Noctegal.
Yeah, the timing of this attack is really important. It took place in Syria this week. Four Americans were killed. There were two military service members, a civilian Defense Department employee, and also a Pentagon contractor. This took place inside Syria. It took place in one of the locations where some of those 2,200 U.S. troops are, troops that United States President Donald Trump has said are coming home. And while there is no, while the timetable is yet to be determined on when those troops are coming home, this is just an interesting attack by the Islamic State, considering that they haven't really been successful against U.S. forces in the whole previous 2.5 years that U.S. forces have been in Syria. There's been 4 deaths, I believe, of U.S. forces inside Syria in the past 2 years. And so this was one of the safest missions, if I can call it that, in an active war zone, which did surprise so many people because of that fact that Mr. Trump decided this would be the first place to withdraw forces. And yet, after that decision came back on December 19th, I believe it was, to withdraw those forces. Here we have a terrorist attack by the Islamic State. They have claimed it. It took place in this town of Manbij, which is a town that separates Turkish forces in northern Syria and Kurdish forces, who the Americans are fighting with in northern Syria. And it's proving a couple of things. Obviously, Islamic State is not defeated. We have 4 Americans that have been killed because of that, and others. So it proves that fact, and it also is leading some American lawmakers to try and push back against the president, even those that are in favor of general policies of Mr. Trump, to reconsider further the decision to remove those U.S. forces from Syria. Now, this attack was a suicide attack. It wasn't, you know, fighting Islamic State in an open battle. This isn't Islamic State forces fighting against American forces. This was Americans visiting a restaurant that they frequent in this town, and an Islamic State soldier going undercover, basically, and blowing himself up in their presence.
So you mentioned pressure from U.S. leaders on President Trump to reconsider his plans for a withdrawal. Do you think in light of this plan, that pressure would have any impact on the withdrawal plans?
I don't think it will. I think Mr. Trump is very committed to the withdrawal. We have seen a bit of a softening over the past two or three weeks of his withdrawal. Back in late December, it was like those troops are coming home and no matter what. And then since he had such big pushback from everyone in his administration, it seems, it has been slowed. Nevertheless, those troops, those U.S. forces are going to come home. So I don't think that this is going to change that. Islamic State right now, they are changing their strategy. The president is right in that the Islamic State doesn't hold massive amounts of territory. It holds probably still 1% of the territory. But it means that Islamic State is going to change its tactics so that we will see more of these style attacks, which is much more dangerous for embedded U.S. forces with the Kurdish forces there. It's much more dangerous for Europeans as well. It's because once they've lost their territory, they have decided that they're going to start more of this traditional terrorist activity, where they have sleeper cells in different locations. Then they are enacted, and they have a terrorist attack against soft targets in Europe, or against a soft target such as this, which was a restaurant where U.S. forces are. And so, before this attack, mainly it was U.S. forces embedded with Kurdish forces that are fighting against Islamic State in warfare. Now it's not going to be that way. And so we might actually, I think we could actually see a speeding up of the withdrawal of U.S. forces as Islamic State takes on this strategy.
So what about the U.S.'s allies and partners? What are their thoughts about America's plans for withdrawal, and how would this attack, maybe change those thoughts?
Well, I think they would be on board with some of the lawmakers from the Republican Party that want Mr. Trump to reconsider. The U.S. force in the region has been a stabilizing force for so long. Sure, there's been mistakes that have been made in the past, but to have the United States there really does ensure that there is a big world player on the scene that is countering Iran, which is what everybody in the Middle East is scared of. The Islamic State to them, those in the Middle East, isn't the big worry. They want the allies of the United States, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Israel, they want the United States there because of Iran. But what we see now is that the U.S. forces, even though it is this withdrawal isn't happening right away, the United States president is committed to that. That's his policy. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State right now, is trying to gather up as many of the allies as he can and say that while we're not going to be here on the ground with you, we will support you. We will help you financially if we need to. We'll help you with arms. But we want you to take care of your own neighborhood. And while that sounds good and well, that is extremely worrying for Saudi Arabia, for Egypt, for Israel, because of how powerful Iran is right now. And so, yeah, we are entering a time period that we haven't seen before in the Middle East in the past 50 years. The United States has been here since the Six-Day War. Soviet influence has diminished. Now we see Soviet or Russian influence back. We see Iran gaining steam, and we see the United States pulling out. And so regardless of what Mr. Pompeo says, the allies know the U.S. wants to leave. And so it is going to trigger a number of things. Yes, it could trigger a greater arms race by Saudi Arabia and others. But it also could trigger these Arab forces that are going to try and look for other allies as well to support them where the United States hasn't had in the past. And these are allies that history proves aren't going to be as benevolent as the United States has been.
So could you place the general Syria situation and what you just mentioned there, the outreach to allies and partner nations, could you place that in the context of Bible prophecy?
Well, in most of the biblical prophecies revolving around this region, we do clearly see an absence of the United States presence. They aren't there. If we're talking about the prophecy about the rise of the King of the South, that is this radical Islamic empire led by Iran, we see in that prophecy the United States is not there. That's found in Daniel 11 and verse 40. Instead, we see another power that isn't right now really in existence in the Middle East. That is a European superpower. And we talk so much on this program about how Europe is rising, how Europe has some large calls for a collective defense, a collective army. And Europe has said, the most important place for this to be deployed is its border regions. And Europe's border regions right now, the southern Mediterranean, and they are Syria. They're the Middle East. And so we could clearly see, and we do see already, at least in terms of arms buildup, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, others that buy up European arms in order to fight against or to ensure that they have enough arms to fight against Iranian hegemony. And we could see that increase. There is a search for allies in the Middle East with the United States retreating. And Bible prophecy says they are going to be calling out to Europe. And it's coming at a time when Europe itself is calling for a more robust military presence in these regions.
Where would you send listeners who would like to know more about that in the context of Bible prophecy?
Well, I would actually just go ahead and give my own article a plug from a couple of weeks ago regarding this. I've just written something for the Trumpet Print that's going to come out in the next edition, but that won't be out for a week and a half, I don't think. And so people can go ahead and read the article I wrote from 2 weeks ago. That's entitled America Withdraws from Syria and from the Middle East.
Okay, and we'll be sure to have a link to that in the show notes. Thanks very much for that, Brent. Britain is leaving the European Union, but the process has been disordered and demoralizing for the British. It's really been utterly chaotic, and this week all of the chaos reached a new level. To tell us about this, we'll go to Josue Michels.
There is no doubt Brexit has dominated the news headlines in Europe this week, and all over the world, really. Every single paper had multiple reports about it. But at the Trumpet, something stands out more than anything else. It all revolved around one day, January 16th, which marked the 33rd anniversary of the death of Herbert W. Armstrong. He was the editor-in-chief of the Plain Truth, the forerunner of the Philadelphia Trumpet. The very day Britain joined the EU in 1973, Mr. Armstrong warned that the country would greatly regret this decision. Seeing the chaos in this week's headlines and what is happening in Britain shows that this prophecy is now being fulfilled. On January 15th, just the day before January 16th, the British Prime Minister, Theresa May, presented her withdrawal agreement to the House of Commons, and it was rejected 432-202. Seeing her great defeat, the opposition said, "We pass a motion of confidence." That went through on January 16th. They voted on it on January 16th. But it was rejected 325-306. So in other words, what the British House of Commons is saying, Theresa May, we believe you negotiated the worst deal possible with the European Union, and we absolutely reject it. But on the other hand, we don't think any one of us could have done a better job. So please keep doing it. And now what the Parliament is facing is that they themselves have to agree on a common Brexit approach. But seeing by the numbers above, the House of Commons is so divided that that seems very unlikely. And on top of it, they would have to have that agreement they come up with to be also accepted by the European Union in Brussels. And the European Union already said that they are not willing to renegotiate anything, and that the deal they are currently having on British table is the best deal they will ever get. Now, our regular Trumpet Hour host or speaker, Mr. Richard Palmer, could tell you all about what that means for Britain. I can't really do that, but instead I can give you some of the European perspective of why Britain is in such chaos in the first place. Now, Britain has rejected the deal Theresa May has negotiated. Britain has now to knock again at Germany's door to get a better deal, if that's at all possible. Back in 2016, the British people decided to leave. They wanted to leave the European Union that dictated their laws and their way of life. Now, at that point, the EU could have said, "Well, you are part of our union, and we want to hear from you, and we can change. We can present you laws that you like, and we can work together." But instead, the European Union was more than happy for Britain to leave. Of course, Germany would have loved for Britain to just submit and conform to the laws, but if they don't, it's better for them to leave, that the Union can move forward and Germany can build its empire that it always wanted. So as Britain decided to leave, Germany was committed to make it as bad for Britain as only possible. They went around through all Europe, communicating with every single nation, telling them to not negotiate with Britain on their own. Britain hoped they could deal with any single nation and work out a trade agreement with France or with Germany, but instead, Germany unified Europe to stand united against Britain. So Britain didn't deal with any nation anymore. It dealt with a European Union dominated by Germany. And that union gave Britain little chance to come up with a good agreement that would be accepted by the British people and Parliament. For the first time, the EU stood united, and Britain stood alone and internally divided. The EU decided to make Britain a sign to any other nation what it means to leave the Union. Theresa May still tried to get a better deal with the European Union. She knocked at the door of every single nation in December, but they all followed the same script and basically said, the deal you have is the best deal you are going to get from us. We will not renegotiate that deal. Instead, we prepare for you to even leave without a deal if it has to come to that scenario. Britain is totally alone in the Union now. They are facing not only Germany or France, but a whole conglomerate of nations. And this we see Mr. Armstrong's prophecy come true. Britain regrets ever joined that Union.
Could you talk a little bit about the specific aspects of the Brexit withdrawal agreement that the British Parliament found so concerning? Just what was it specifically that prompted them to reject this deal?
Well, the paper is a long document of about 585 pages. It regulates how Britain exactly would leave the Union. But what most of the British parliamentarians didn't like about it is that they feared that while Britain might lose all its right in having a say in the EU, they might still have to abide by some of the laws of the EU. And they were especially concerned that they couldn't negotiate a deal, a trade agreement afterwards, and that Ireland, especially Northern Ireland, would have a special case in that agreement.
You have an article up on thetrumpet.com right now that discusses a lot of this news. It's called Brexit 27 verses 1. And in that, you quoted a scripture from the book of Hosea. Could you talk a little bit about that scripture and just how it applies to the situation there in Britain today?
Right. The scripture you're referring to is Hosea 8 verse 9, where it reads, "For they are gone up to Assyria as a wild ass, along by himself. Ephraim has hired lovers." In that scripture, the Bible compares Ephraim with a lone donkey. And the late Herbert W. Armstrong has explained the modern identity of Ephraim. In his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, he explained that Britain is modern Ephraim, and that Assyria is modern Germany. So here we see that Ephraim is going to Germany for help, and it's very desperate. Donkeys are very social animals, and if they are left alone, they act unwisely and desperate. And Ephraim, or Britain today, acts very much the same way. And it was funny, as soon as I finished writing my article and it got posted, I watched the German news again, and I actually saw a picture of a lone donkey on one of the German websites talking about Brexit and the backstop concerning Ireland. So it was kind of funny to see that lone donkey, and it looked right into the face of the camera and reminded me again on that verse. And while that was a funny coincidence, the Bible often uses a vivid imagery to really drive the point home. And this time it was the warning once uttered by Herbert W. Armstrong in his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, that again sounds in the ears of the British people today.
Yes, and we'll be sure to include a link in our show notes to The United States and Britain in Prophecy by Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong, and also a link to Shosue's article, Brexit 27 Against 1. And we also have an article by Richard Palmer called Brexit Vote, Why Britain Faces a Historic Crisis. Well, thanks very much for bringing us up to speed on that, Shosue.
Good to be here.
On Tuesday, the Pentagon published a bombshell report about China's military power and just how rapidly this nation that not long ago was mostly peasants working in rice fields is now transforming into a 21st century military powerhouse. To tell us about this, we'll go to Anthony Chibadidwe.
Yes, we do talk quite a lot about China's advancing military might, and when we do that, we rely on a lot of sources for our analysis and for the raw data that we use. And as you pointed out, some of those sources are telling us that it's getting really, really, really worse. And they are seriously concerned about it. As you said, on Tuesday, the Pentagon released a sobering report titled China Military Power, Modernizing a Force to Fight and Win. It talks in its intro that China has benefited immensely from the double-digit economic growth that it had a while back. And it says that it has tripled its military spending since 2002, hitting around $200 billion last year. And while that falls far short of what the United States spends, which is about $700 billion a year, China doesn't spend as much on research and development because it benefits from stealing technology from other countries, right, and also from forcing some companies to release some of its technologies in exchange for access to the massive market in China. This has been helping China a lot. The report says that China is, quote, on the verge of fielding some of the most modern weapon systems in the world. In some areas, it already leads the world. Here's something else that it says. It says China has built or acquired a wide array of advanced platforms, including submarines, major surface combat ships, missile patrol craft, etc. And it also says that China has developed the world's first roadmobile anti-ship ballistic missile, a system specifically designed to attack enemy aircraft carriers. Now, this is coming from the United States, and it's saying that in some areas, China is leading, and it's saying it's building the first ever types of these roadmobile anti-ballistic missile equipment. It says that China wants to use its modernization program to achieve great power status. It says China is building a robust lethal force with capabilities spanning the air, maritime, space, and information domains, which will enable China to impose its will in the region. As it continues to grow in strength and confidence, our nation's leaders will face a China insistent on having a greater voice in global interactions, which at times may be antithetical to U.S. interests. The document is more than 100 pages, and it discusses the many different ways in which China has advanced its military, but it does zero in particularly on Taiwan. Here's what it says. Quote, Beijing's longstanding interest to eventually compel Taiwan's reunification with the mainland and deter any attempt by Taiwan to declare independence has served as the primary driver for China's military modernization. Beijing's anticipation that foreign forces will intervene in a Taiwan scenario led the Chinese military to develop a range of systems to deter and deny foreign regional force projection. So it's saying that a lot of this is fueled by China's desire to preserve its hold on Taiwan and prevent it from splitting from Taiwan.
And it sounds like they really are ramping up their military power in a way that could allow them to possibly use force to bring Taiwan under the control of the Chinese Communist Party, which China has often threatened to do. Could you place this in the context of Bible prophecy for us and just let the listeners know what they might read to learn more about it?
Yeah, just before I do that, Taiwan has been really concerned about it. In fact, that we're holding live fire military drills on Thursday. And we have been reading, right? We've written a lot about Taiwan as far back as August 1998. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury has an article titled Taiwan Betrayal. And it's interesting how Taiwan is turning out to be a really important factor in China's military advancement. But it's not just going to be limited to Taiwan. We see China developing all over the world. Another article that emphasizes that we have at thetrumpet.com is titled China is Steering the World Toward War. And our booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy, also gets into great detail about talking about this advancement that China is building on right now. And the Bible does talk about that. It talks about China being part of this massive Asian military power that's coming.
We'll be sure to include links to those articles and to Russia and China and Prophecy in the show notes there. You're listening to Trumpet Hour, our week in review program on 101.3 KPCG, and most of the stories that we're discussing today are up on our website, thetrumpet.com, or they'll be up there soon if they're not yet. So please visit thetrumpet.com for more. In just a moment, we'll take a short break, but first we'll discuss one more story about the government shutdown here in the U.S. It has now become the longest one in the country's history, with both sides digging in deeper and deeper, and with no apparent end in sight. To bring us up to speed on this, we'll go to David Vigil.
Thank you, Mr. Jacques. As you mentioned, this is the longest government shutdown. We're now stretching into its 28th day, blowing past a 21-day record set previously in 1995. And as you said, both sides are digging in deeper, so really there's no end in sight. Both sides are refusing to negotiate as of today. And what that means for the government there's about 800,000 federal workers there that have been furloughed or first to work without pay. And of course, there's some loss of government services. The departments, the federal departments that have been affected are departments like the EPA, the IRS, which maybe some people might be excited about at this time of the year, Department of State, Housing, Urban Development, Treasury, Agriculture, Commerce, Interior, Justice, and Homeland Security. So 9 out of the 15 federal departments are facing some issues here. And this is all because the House and the Senate did not pass a spending bill in December of 2018. They let the funding for those departments expire. They're working on a spending bill, but the president said that he'd veto it if there was no funds for the border wall. And so they had to work on that. Paul Ryan, who was the Speaker of the House back then, passed the spending bill. He just gave only $5.7 billion, so not even that much, to support the wall. And it didn't get past the Senate. So now the Democrats are in control of the House, and you have Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi. She's leading the charge there, and they're refusing to even give that amount. And the Senate is refusing to back down. The Republican-controlled Senate's refusing to back down from Trump's demands. They want to have some kind of funds for the wall.
So do you have any speculation about what the outcome might be? Will Trump end up compromising, or will his opponents?
Well, if you look at his recent actions, it doesn't seem like they're compromising as far as there needs to be funds for the wall. Now, $5.7 billion is not enough to actually do what he wants. So I think even that was a compromise. And now that the situation's gotten worse with the Democrats in charge, for him, he's probably more likely just to just get some kind of partial funding. And the Democrats, if they're going to compromise, I don't think it's going to be on the wall. If they're going to compromise, it'll be on some kind of promise on tightening security in other ways that won't actually stem the flow of immigration. I mean, that's what they want. So,
could you place the internal division we see in the United States, which is evident, you know, by this shutdown, in the context of Bible prophecy?
Well, we are living in the Jeroboam time, and we know that President Trump here is fulfilling a role where he temporarily, because God is doing it through him, strengthens America. But we still have all the underlying problems of America caused because of their sins. And we know in Isaiah 3 verses 1 through 4, God prophesies that he takes away the mighty man, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the counselor, and gives children and babes to rule over them. And really, I bring this up not because I want to just focus on that, but it's just kind of a something worth thinking about. We're talking about the government of the United States going and shut down. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Fleury wrote in the God Family Government booklet, "In man's entire history, we have not found one government that would truly serve the people. The whole world is in crisis, and the major problem is government. Soon we're going to see a government rule this earth that will work. It's a government that men have always rejected." So I think what's exciting to think about is just how much we need this soon coming government established by God coming here, because this is America. This is the best of the worst, you could say, the best system here. And what we're seeing right now is actually that system in action, the checks and the balances, the executive branch versus the legislative branch. So this is all written in the Constitution there, although maybe not exactly the way the founders intended it to work out, but this is man's government. And so it just makes me excited to think about having a government that really puts the people first, things like protection not even debated.
Yes, and we'll be sure to include a link to The God Family Government by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury in our show notes there, and also one to Great Again, which explains more about what was said there about the Jeroboam end. Thanks very much for that, David. You're listening to Trumpet Hour here on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. Coming up, we'll talk about a plan to bring peace to the Israel-Palestine conflict, Russia's ongoing aggression on Ukraine, the leftward drift of the United States, and a meeting in Switzerland that got very little press coverage, but that might have been quite significant. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to Trumpet Hour, the Week in Review.
Well, it's easy sometimes to forget about the conflict between Russia and Ukraine and Russia's ongoing aggression on its neighbor there 5 years after Crimea was annexed. But the tensions remain high and the conflict lumbers on, and there are signs that it could get a whole lot worse very soon. To tell us about the latest there, we'll go once again to Anthony.
Yeah, let me just back up by just stating that ever since the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine did strive to be neutral, trying to form ties with NATO and Europe and also with Russia. But at some point, it was definitely shifting toward Europe, and then Russia meddled in there, and then you have the whole Crimean crisis. And the latest of the tensions between these two countries was in November last year when Russia's Black Sea Fleet based in Crimea fired on three Ukrainian naval vessels and seized them and also arrested 24 crew members on board. And I believe it was this Monday that those crew members attended a hearing about that. So really, tensions have been really high. So it is in this context that Russia this week warned Ukraine that it could soon cease to be a country. The Russian Security Council secretary, he said on Tuesday that Ukraine could lose its statehood if it continues to be divided by competing interests. It accused the Ukrainian authorities of being controlled by the United States and said that the continuation of such a policy by Kiev authorities can contribute to the loss of Ukraine's statehood. And of course, Russia has been funding some separatists right there in Ukraine who have been fighting against the Ukrainian government. And that war has been going on for about 5 years now. It has killed more than 10,000 people. And it's been going on for about 4 or 5 years now. And so far, Russia has, for the most part, been fighting indirectly in Ukraine. But there could be a chance that it might get more directly involved, especially with this present crisis right there. And just speaking of Russia's potential direct involvement, Fox News had a report just this Thursday, saying that satellite images shot on Thursday showed a new Russian deployment of missile batteries that are nuclear capable, that it deployed near the border with Ukraine. It says that the ballistic missiles have a range of up to 310 miles and can carry both unconventional as well as nuclear warheads, putting most of America's NATO allies at risk. So this is a very troubling situation that's going on in the Ukraine. And we've talked a lot about that, about how what happens in Ukraine, and especially with Russia, how that really bothers Europe and how it does frighten Europe. Trumpet editor-in-chief, he wrote an article, a bombshell article in January 2004. It's titled "Russia Frightens Europe and Fulfills Bible Prophecy." And it's an article that I like to recommend all our listeners to go back and read, because it talks about how Europe is likely to react to Russia's aggression, particularly in Ukraine. And one of the things we can expect to come out of it is Europe just uniting a lot more to be able to stand up to Russia.
Well, thanks very much for that, Anthony. We will be sure to include a link to that in the show notes. We often hear about how the generation called millennials, they skew significantly to the left in terms of their ideology and many of their political views. But a new report this week shows that the post-millennial generation makes millennials look like Ronald Reagan. To tell us about this, we'll go once again to David.
Thank you, Mr. Jacques. The Pew Research Center came out with a report saying that Generation Z, those who are born after 1996, they're now between the ages of 13 and 21. Generation Z are more liberal than previous generations. 7 in 10 members in that generation say the government should do more to solve problems. And they're pretty much taking pride in those liberal values. And I think what's crazy is you can tell that these younger people, this generation, are still trying to grasp some of the basic ideas of reality, because they say in this report, one measure of the evolution of the youngest generation is that more than a third of them, 35%, know someone who prefers to be addressed using gender neutral pronouns. So apparently this generation can't see the obvious, but are very proud in espousing these liberal views. And there's something that Mr. Gerald Fleury wrote in his article, Disaster for America. Now, this is back in January 2007, where he really gives a strong, stinging rebuke about those liberal values. And I don't know if we have time, but I'd like to share that with the audience.
Yeah, sure.
He writes that he's writing about how Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats were taking over Congress at the time, and Nancy Pelosi was quoted saying, "I pride myself in being called a liberal, and I don't consider myself a moderate." And Mr. Fleury writes, "The problem is much of what we call liberal is actually vile." And he quotes Isaiah 32, verse 5, "The vile person shall no more be called liberal, nor the churl said to be bountiful." And he goes through those words. Vile means wicked or ungodly. It means to be withered or faded, implies falling down, fainting, or losing strength or decay associated with acting foolishly, which to me, that report just demonstrates. Churl means withholding or stingy. American society is all about getting, not giving. The word implies fraud and deceit, something we see today both in political parties in the United States. And basically the whole thing is just villainy. It's just evil villainy and lawlessness. So you see that even in this report where they're talking about the gender-neutral pronouns. I mean, I don't even know how that exists, but that's just something vile. It's foolish. It's just evil. And that's the Bible's description of a liberal today. So it's not even just Mr. Gerald Fleury. It's what the Bible describes these values as.
And among the younger generation, as you mentioned there, it's viewed as really, you know, primitive not to espouse these notions and to sign up for this new enlightenment that says we should not only tolerate these new ideas and new definitions of gender, but celebrate them. So it is a really alarming trend there.
Yeah, it's just crazy. The irony is that these this generation is going to be, in some ways, some of the most educated as far as attending colleges and schools and all that.
Right.
But they come away with the least amount of education. They can't even grasp some foundational biological realities or facts. And they espouse these liberal values because that's what's being taught to them. Mr. Fleury wrote in Great Again about how the communists and the new left, they took over the educational system. He wrote in Great Again, first in colleges, then high schools, and even elementary schools. It is from the educational system that a nation gets its leadership. So this generation is getting steeped in this vile, villainous education, and they're accepting it. They're, like, as you said, celebrating it, and it's just directly opposite to everything that God wants to celebrate and what he warns here.
We'll be sure to include a link to both of those pieces of literature that David mentioned in the show notes, so please check in with thetrumpet.com to get more on that. Thanks very much for that, David. The administration of United States President Donald Trump has promised the Israeli and Palestinian people a deal of the century to finally bring peace to that part of the Middle East. There has been all kinds of speculation about what exactly this deal might entail, but no details released until this week when those details were apparently leaked. To bring us up to speed on the latest developments on this front, we'll go once again to Brent.
Yeah, this does seem like a pretty accurate leak. It came from a senior American official that was that took place in a briefing this past week in Washington regarding this peace deal. It's forthcoming. It's meant to be released after the Israeli election on April 9th, sometime thereafter, as to not really impact the election itself. What's interesting about this, a couple of points from it. It looks like there obviously is going to be two states, according to this, an Israeli state and a Palestinian state. This Palestinian state is going to be on about 85 to 90% of the West Bank. This is the territory that Jordan controlled up to 1967 that Israel won in that war. And that area is going to mostly go to the Palestinians, which is expected in any two-state solution. It also calls for a division of Jerusalem. Israel would maintain sovereignty over the old city and the Western Wall, but it does call for the day-to-day running of that territory to be administered together with the Palestinians, Jordanians, and perhaps other countries, kind of giving it a more international feel. And so there would be probably some international presence inside the old city, and the old city is important, obviously, because that's what has the Temple Mount, that's what has the Western Wall, and all the holy sites, or a lot of the holy sites here. I would say that's an interesting factor of this as well. The Palestinians would still be able to make East Jerusalem their capital, but just outside of the old city environs.
So what do you think? Is this the deal of the century, as the Trump administration has said, and will it be something that both sides can live with?
Well, it is interesting. Obviously, it's interesting what else came out of this report of this meeting. Apparently, the report said that the White House expectation was for the Palestinians to reject this deal, this plan, initially. But the White House expects that Israel is meant to give it a positive response. That's what they expect from this. They expect Israel to buy in, the Palestinians to reject it at first. But what's interesting about this, and the whole reason it's been there is a delay in this until after the elections, because the president wants Mr. Netanyahu to still be in power to try and negotiate this, I guess. It's his friend. But if he released this before the election, Israelis would, because this isn't a good deal for Israel. Israel does not want to give over all this territory of the West Bank, not unless Palestinians kind of change their tune in terms of saying that they would like to live side by side with Israel. They don't. Many Israelis don't see it as a positive step forward to negotiate with an entity that is sworn to their destruction, and that is, you know, a logical negotiating position is to not negotiate with somebody that, no matter what happens, they still don't think you should be there. But nevertheless, the Trump administration does want Israel to respond positively to this. That Mr. Trump obviously sees this as a deal. It is a better deal for Israel than what Ehud Olmert offered the Palestinians back a decade ago. He offered them more of the West Bank, but that deal was rejected by the Palestinians. But President Trump seems to think that perhaps this will fly better with Israel and the Palestinians. And we know that when Mr. Trump wants a deal to be made, he does try and force it upon those players that he's negotiating with.
Right. Is there any indication about whether this leak was planned just to sort of, you know, as a trial balloon to see how people would respond to it, or was it an actual leak?
That's a good question. I doubt that it was. I doubt that, because we have seen a lot of leaks from this administration. I think this is probably close to the real deal that we're going to see come April 9th and the bit thereafter. What's interesting in terms of what we look in terms of Bible prophecy and how we see the future going here in Jerusalem, and also these peace deals between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Our editor-in-chief has written so much about this, so much about Israel's negotiating position, and how it is a dangerous delusion to believe that you can negotiate with a party that is trying to kill you, and that, again, your position at the start should be, well, really, Israel's, if it was thinking logically, we shouldn't want this type of peace deal, which would put a dangerous Palestinian state right on the doorstep of Jerusalem. And I think the prime minister here would reject such a deal, even though the Trump administration wants to push it, even though they are a friend of Israel. This is the American president that's closest to Israel of any president before, it seems. He moved the embassy of America to Jerusalem. No one else has done that. He's expecting a win here with Israel, and he's going to put pressure on the current administration to do just that. But I wouldn't be surprised if the prime minister himself comes out wholeheartedly and rejects this deal. And that could be a catalyst for a dividing of this close relationship between Mr. Trump and Israel. The Bible talks about a breaking of the brotherhood that's going to take place between the state of Israel and the United States of America, a historic relationship that's generally been quite friendly. That is going to break, and it's going to break in this administration. It's going to break with President Donald Trump in power. What could do that? Well, him wanting this deal of the century and Israel coming back and saying, thanks for everything you've done for us so far, but we can't accept that. That could precipitate that prophesied break.
You mentioned the breaking of the brotherhood there. Where would you send listeners if they'd like to read more about that Bible prophecy?
Well, you can actually read the article we have entitled Breaking the Brotherhood. It was written a couple of years ago by the executive editor, Stephen Flory.
Okay, we'll be sure to include a link to that in our show notes. Thanks very much for that, Brent. There was a conference this week in Switzerland that didn't really receive too much press coverage, but it might have been significant for some somewhat obscure but very interesting reasons. To tell us about this, we'll go once again to Shosue.
That's why, and as you pointed out, there was little to no coverage about his story. But for the long-time listeners and readers of The Trumpet, it has a very unique and very important reason why we should watch this event very closely. And it has again to do with January 16th, and it has again to do with a warning that was once uttered by the late theologian Mr. Armstrong. On January 16th to 18th, St. Moritz, Switzerland, hosted the 2019 Crypto Finance Conference. Now, to most people, that doesn't mean much at all. They don't know what it might mean, what it is. What is a crypto finance conference? What is a cryptocurrency? And why is it important that we mention this on our Trumpet Hour? Well, there's one man that for whom this conference means a whole lot, and that is the former economics and defense minister, Karl Theodor zu Guttenberg. And those on the Trumpet probably know that we have been watching this man for years. And in the fintech scene, that is the financial technology scene, This man becomes more and more important, and he is invited to multiple such events. But this one is of particular interest to us. Now, Gutenberg was invited because he has a unique understanding of politics, of digital trends, and he still holds a whole lot of influence in Europe. And while some of the leaders in Europe might not listen to the new developments in the digital world, he has a keen ear to hear about every single trend, because he wants to bring Europe at the head of the race for this new rising financial technologies. So, on January 17th, he gave a speech, a keynote speech at this event, and was entitled Blockchain and Geopolitics, a Powder Cake or a Solution for Global Crisis. In this speech, Gutenberg lines out why he thinks that this technology could solve the global crisis this world is currently facing. Mr. Gutenberg believes that this technology, which is greatly appraised by financial visionaries, could solve today's global crises. And although the political leaders of this world won't listen to him yet, we at the Trumpet believe that the time will come that Gutenberg indeed will have the ear of Europe's leaders and will have the power to implement his ideas for Europe's solutions. The late theologian Herbert W. Armstrong in fact prophesied that Europe would unite, but he said it would only unite after a massive banking crisis hits in America. Massive banking crisis in America could suddenly result in triggering European nations to unite as a new power, new world power, larger than the US. And this prophecy is in Revelation 17, where it speaks about Europe's 10 leading nations and how they would rally around one man, a man who has vision, a man who has ideas how to solve the current crisis. And we believe that this man is Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg. And January 16th gives us every year a sign that we should watch this man closely.
Well, thanks very much for that, Josue. Josue has written an article about this. We'll have it published on thetrumpet.com very soon. It's called Gutenberg and January 16th and 17th. And we will also have a link in our show notes to a brand new booklet written by Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury. It's called January 16th, God's Miracle Day. So please come to the show notes for today's episode to see both of those. Thanks very much for that, Josue. This is Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3. Remember, you can find us online at thetrumpet.com. Please visit us there to read more about the stories we're discussing today and to subscribe to our print edition and our news brief, which we send out several times each week. Tell us what you think about the program by emailing us at letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks very much to our panel today, Anthony Chibadiwe, Josue Michels, David Vihil, and Brent Noctegal.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Good to be here.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks also to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Josh Sloan. And we'll leave you today with some words from Albert Einstein. Education is not the learning of facts. It's rather the training of the mind to think. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.